Hey everyone, welcome to Alumlus. Thank you so much for listening. Today is Friday, April 26th, and this is the Alumni Engagement with a Career Twist edition. I am Ryan Catherwood, and I'm joined by Chris Marshall, founder and CEO of CMAC. Hey, Chris.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Good to see you. As always, on the show, we talk about engagement strategies in advancement. Today, we are pre-recorded, but we will be checking the comments section of the LinkedIn event. So please do chime in with a question or a comment, and we will be sure to get back with you. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast edition of Alumlus to hear our 30-minute bonus segment with today's special guest, Sally Sistar from Denison University, and all of our special guests each week. We are grateful for the partnership we have with Max Leiston and the team at Protopia. They are huge supporters of the show, and we are big supporters of them. Protopia has created a transformational AI-powered technology that matches questions from students or recent graduates with alumni all over the world that are perfectly positioned to answer them. Without asking alumni to be mentors or participate in programs spread out over months or sign up for an app or a platform, Protopia makes scaling introductions simple. Questions get submitted through Protopia's AI, and that does all the work. Protopia can even target stakeholders like young alumni or lapsed donors and provide them with a meaningful volunteer experience. Visit protopia.co/alumlus for more details and check out the technology that schools like Duke. Our special guest today from Denison is a Protopia user, Florida State, the London School of Economics, and several others. Find out what they're doing to make alumni networks available to everyone. All right. Well, we are in the saddle again, Chris. Good to see you. We had the chance to connect on a couple of items yesterday, but you were traveling last week. You were had the unfortunate turn of events to find yourself doing some client work in Hawaii, which I'm sure that was frustrating. But you know, you've mentioned Maui, the school that you were working with, Seabury Hall, is there on Maui. And I think you actually mentioned, you know, the fires on a previous episode. And I thought maybe we could kind of just start by your reflections from that trip and kind of what you saw from your trip to Maui.
Yeah, working in paradise is never a bad thing. And it's always the places like that where my family wants to come with me on the trip. So we had a little extended part for a family vacation. But I spent 3 days with the folks at Seabury Hall. It's a grade six through 12 independent school. It's a phenomenal, really interesting place. And they're doing well. They're coming through the fires. You know, they weren't directly affected by it, but the whole island was affected by it, no matter where you were. But it's an interesting time. I was supposed to be there last fall, right after it happened. And of course, we moved it to the spring and just got back, and I'll be writing up the report pretty soon on their advancement operation. So it's a good visit there.
Yeah, I bet it was. And working in paradise, as you say, is pretty great. I need to figure out how to find me a client in paradise as well. But, you know, look, every school, whether it's a college prep academy like Seabury Hall or colleges or universities of different shapes and sizes, have to differentiate themselves in the market. And we're definitely going through a period of massive disruption when it comes to enrollment. But what have you seen as far as private liberal arts colleges working to differentiate themselves?
Yeah, it's a really interesting time. Of course, you mentioned the enrollment struggles. I mean, as we see this, you know, this notorious demographic cliff coming for all these schools that are trying to enroll a incoming class, and there are less students available, and these are private, you know, relatively speaking, expensive institutions, and schools are struggling. And my big worry on this topic is how schools are surviving around the whole tuition discount issue. They're getting classes, but they're paying a lot to get that class filled. And what schools are doing, I'll give you a couple examples I wrote down. So place like Rollins College, I spent a lot of time with. They're doubling down on liberal arts as a foundation for a career in any area. Especially, they have a business school, so they actually leverage that really well. Franklin and Marshall, they're similarly, but they're also focusing on student experience very strongly in their marketing. High Point University, as you know, Ryan, they talk about their life skills as part of their education, and of course, Denison will bring Sally out here. They talk about it. The president talks about it. Liberal arts education with a career twist is the line he uses to describe it. So they really differentiated themselves in the marketplace for that reason. And I think, you know, the best schools are going to do that and keep themselves afloat through all this. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out across the country, though.
Yeah, you know, what I love about the liberal arts is that really the liberal arts promise is that you can major in whatever you want and have whatever career you may want, and they don't have to necessarily be directly linked, right? Yeah. And that's where I think our work, you know, in alumni engagement, the partnership between alumni and career services, arming students and recent graduates with the knowledge that they need to understand how hiring works, how referral systems work, right? So that you can be a biology major, but get a job working at a museum because you're able to talk to the right people and let them know about your interests and establish those sets of connections. So
architecture major right here. I went to Lehigh University, which is not a liberal arts school, but there's an arts and science college. My experience is very much liberal arts and architecture degree. You know, I always say that I learned how to learn, and in some ways I learned how to lead and different experiences outside the classroom. And that's what served me well. I mean, I was a swimming coach and an alumni leader and now a consultant, and I've never used my architecture degree, but I learned the other things that I can apply to the rest of my life. So,
I was a rhetoric and communication studies major, and I just tell people I majored in bullshitting, which is appropriate for, you know, hosting a podcast, I guess.
You're good at it, Tim.
All right, we'll bring out our special guest for today, Sally Sistar. How are you?
I'm great, Ryan. How are you?
Come in on that, huh, Sally?
Yeah, that was a fun moment to drop in on there. I think that might have been my first four-letter swear on this podcast. I know you've dropped a few.
I'm impressed. So
yeah, I've thrown a few, but Ryan's kept it clean until right then. So
49 episodes in. As Sally is the Executive Director of Alumni and Family Engagement at Denison University. We promoted the show, Sally, this week, and we mentioned it last week, right? Liberal Arts College with a Career Twist. You know, that's Denison, how they're working to differentiate in the market. But what's that all about? You know, how is the school sort of working to bring that brand promise to life?
So I would say probably about 4 or 5 years ago, Ryan, we doubled down and had a huge investment in the Career Center. So it's called the Knowlton Center. That is the foundation that provides grant and sponsorship money for it. And it essentially is like careers are infused in every aspect of Denison. So in the classroom, obviously in the student organizations, as well as in the Knowlton Center. And so, you know, we have a lot of activities that take students on the road to explore careers and industries. We do a lot of topics and workshops on campus, you know, educating them on the aspects of career. So everything is infused, right? It is, our students get a phenomenal education. We talk about it as the power of and at Denison, which I'm happy to talk a little bit more about. But, you know, how are we preparing them for their professional journey afterwards? And so we don't make the promise, right? But we have a journey program that essentially takes all sophomores, or we want all sophomores to go through it, that are learning all aspects of career. So it really is infused in every single element of their education to prepare them for what's after Denison.
We're going to talk about your journey over the last year in alumni engagement, but rewind before you arrived 4 or 5 years ago, as you said, Knowlton went through a similar journey. Their staff increased significantly. There was a major institutional investment in that operation. But do you remember the size of what it was and where it is today?
Yeah, I want to say they were probably like 8 to 10, right, around that range. And now they're over 30 individuals that on a daily basis are thinking about careers and working with our students.
So a liberal arts institution with 30 people in the career office would be a dream for many career offices in any size school out there. So,
yeah, that's the truth. And the reporting line there for this career center is through the academic affairs
through the provost office.
Yeah. And that's really the way. I mean, I've always been an advocate for the advancement aligned career services office, but it really isn't unless the provost is bought in that you get true equity across the university, ensuring that all students get these narratives into their educational experience. Because let's face it, at most, a lot of school students only do stuff when they're required to do it. And that's, you know, that's sort of the academy is where the requirements are live on a regular basis through the curriculum. But so your work in the alumni center, alumni and family engagement, you are, of course, tasked with kind of building a program that matches that secret sauce, right? The with the career twist, or maybe not. Maybe you're sort of thinking about it differently. But what say you? How are you thinking about sort of building the career or building the alumni family engagement program to kind of match that secret sauce?
So, Ryan, we have, with Chris's help as our consultant, we incorporated that into our strategic plan. We just launched that this fall and takes us through fiscal year 27. So one of the key priorities is the professional journey, right? And so Knowlton Center team is absolutely one of our key partners on campus. In fact, we added a role to the AFE team that is fully focused on the professional journey. So that priority. And Julie Tucker, who is the individual in that position, and Ryan Breckbill from Knowlton Center are literally working together, talking every single day. It is a key priority for us. Denison already had a lot of alumni involvement in the career space. I will say I've been very impressed with how many professors actually are bringing alumni back on a very consistent basis. It's more than I've ever seen in any place that I've been. So for us, it's the intentionality, it's connecting dots. It's, you know, again, partnering with Knowlton Center so that we can elevate what we are providing, enhance that. And then we're looking at it, obviously. Students are critically important, right? Like, we have to prepare them for success and graduate. But it's also, what are we doing with our alumni? And we've always had the promise at Denison that we would support them for the first 5 years, but we really didn't talk about it, right? Because we weren't really sure if we had the resources to support that. With this strategic plan, like, we are really promoting that heavily and letting student or young alumni know that we're there for them. We're particularly focused on that 0 to 4, 0 to 5 year range because of the career pivots that we see. Kind of like Chris said, you know, architecture major, and he didn't use that in his career, right? We get a lot of stories like that of, oh yeah, I was a chemistry major, but now I'm, you know, working over here in business. So our goal is to be able to support that. We talk about that we want to be and align and support our alumni all through their lifelong journey, including their career. So we're really, really honed in on that.
Sally, you mentioned the growth of Knowlton 8 to 10 to over 30 people. You're on a similar journey. I don't know if it's going to be quite that scale, but I know you're on a path for some growth there, and you're creating an organizational structure that's going to align to match some of the planning work that you and I have worked on together. Take us through that process and your journey and kind of where you are right now, and maybe even put a plug in because you have some open positions, I know. So this is your.
So, yeah, the strategic plan really gave us the opportunity, you know, to look at the staff and how they were lined up, right? The very much generalist is how I inherited a team. And so we have had the chance to, again, look at what are our key priorities. There are 5 priorities in that strategic plan, and then align the staff accordingly. So we also were able to propose new positions. So, you know, really, really lucky at the resources at Denison. I realize we're in a very blessed position that others don't necessarily have that luxury to. So I don't take this for granted. But we got 6 brand new roles, FTE roles, with the strategic plan that, you know, were not in place before, and then realigned several of those positions as well, kind of focusing in their responsibilities on the key areas.
What were you before, and where will you be when it's all done?
I think we were at 11 or 12 before, and when it's all said and done, we will be at 18 for alumni and family engagement. And 2 of those individuals are So Julie Tucker and Sarah Giovanelli are the team. They have the professional journey, but they also have family engagement. So probably 80% of their time is focused on the professional journey and then 20% on family engagement. And everyone else is focused on alumni engagement. Right.
So, and on a base of about 30,000 alumni, what's the number you guys use for your alumni population?
Living Contactable, we're a little under 30,000, about 28, 29,000.
The folks listening to this are going to be jealous of your situation because you're going to end up with 18 staff for about 28,000 alums. That's a great ratio. So,
listen, I've been in that place before, though, right? We're
the other side of that, right?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's truly a bounty, and I'm sure you're having lots of success. It's a school with great school pride for the alma mater. I'm sure you've discovered what programs have been successful so far, and what have you kind of noticed that you're like, yeah, we're going to double down on that effort.
So for probably about 4 years now, we have been doing a program called Remix. It is a professional program focused in on various industries. And so it was called Remix because it's essentially you bring all the generations in, right? Students, alumni from any age, and you put them together, right? Centered around a variety of topics. We just hosted one a week and a half ago for women. So it was Remix and Women. And it was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, we had over 200 students, about 80 alumni, and the momentum and the conversations, it just was unbelievable. So that program has shown great success for us. It started with the entrepreneurial community. We still do that every fall. And now in the spring, we add a new edit to it, right? New addition. So next spring, we'll actually do it for the arts. So our arts alumni and community. Committee's already started. Really, really excited about that. Let me also give a shout out to your sponsor. That's the other program that I want to highlight that is working incredibly well for Denison is Protopia. We call it Ask a Denisonian. And we are getting like just so much good activity and engagement through that. Alumni who have not engaged with the university in quite a while, right, are hearing from students with good questions or connecting with them. We're bringing in identifying volunteers from that. I can't speak highly enough. We're basically right at a year of since our soft launch of it, and it has been a tremendous impact for us.
What do you think's been the key to the success of Protopia so far?
It is infused in every aspect of campus, right? So at Knowlton Center, there are, I believe, 10 career coaches. I might have my number wrong in that, but that is infused in their conversations with students every single day. Faculty are using it. In fact, our faculty are actually using the program themselves to identify alumni to come and speak to their classrooms, right? Yeah. So are they traveling to, you know, taking students to DC or New York or wherever, and they are using Ask a Denisonian to identify alumni that they can, you know, visit while they're there. So again, it's infused in everything that we do, and that is what's made it really successful.
Yeah, it can't just be another tool in the toolkit, right? It's got to be a positioned centrally and across the university as a really important engagement initiative university-wide, I think, to kind of see the results that you're getting. But they are real. There's a real opportunity there, and it's one spent a couple of years working with Max and the team at Protopia, and always thought to myself, that would definitely be a tool that I would use, you know, if I was in the position to be leading a team for the reasons that you just described. The potential for engagement is substantial, and it's great that you've been able to realize it.
Those same reasons and attributes that you just pointed out, though, are true about any technology solution.
Yeah.
Protopia in particular, what Denison is the case study in it because they've used it and it infused across everything they do. And that's the way for any technology tool to work. So I'm thrilled.
Yeah. But it means partnerships, you know, yeah. it means strong relationships. It means it can't operate in a silo over in advancement, right? It requires collaborators. And that's not always the easiest thing at some universities, right? There's often not necessarily a culture of that type of collaboration. And it's more, this is mine and that's yours. And we do our thing. Yeah. Got my metrics. Yeah. You've got yours. And we're just going to stay over here in our side and do it. But Chris, you've had a front row seat to the growth at Denison. You've had been to campus a few times. You've worked with Sally and the team there for quite a while now. What have you noticed about, you know, the trajectory that they're on, or just sort of reflections in general about the university?
Well, there's the fact that Sally's sitting there might be partly to blame me on, or credit, depending on how she enjoys the role. But about a year in, it's credit, I think, so far.
It's a credit, yes, absolutely. No place else I'd rather be.
Yeah. So I started working with them before Sally was there, and got to know from a different level. And when Sally and I had the conversation about the opportunity, I was like, this is the place that's going to be growing, and you're going to want to be part of it. So anyway, that was a fun sort of behind the scenes role I played there. But what I've noticed, most importantly, though, is that it started, my first involvement was with the vice president, who introduced me to the president, who had me speak to their board of trustees about the importance of alumni engagement, and took that and with investment and full support and, you know, full engagement of all the way up to the, like I said, the board of trustees and the president. They are all in on building an alumni engagement, just like they did with the Career Center. They had the same exact mentality going into this next phase that they're in right now around alumni engagement, because they think of it that seriously. And it's not a lot of places that have done it at that level. And I can say I've met probably 300 college presidents in my career, and I can count on one hand the ones that fall into the category of visionary and amazing and leader and all the great things we can say about the president, Denison Adam, who is just a superstar. And when you get that support from a guy like that, the board buys in, the rest of the leadership team at the university buys in, we bring in the right leader, and on and on. So board of trustee, president, and vice presidential support for this has been the key, I think, in making this work. And it's been fun to watch that unfold.
Yeah. Adam Weinberg is a dynamic leader. He is phenomenal, right? Ryan, the other thing that really helps us too is, you know, so we do presidential receptions, taking him on the road and sharing updates, what's happening at campus. And one of the things he continues to share in his remarks is ask a Denisonian. So go back to that, right? Like, encouraging alumni, if they haven't received a question yet, they likely will, and be responsive. And then it's, you know, as a resource for them as well. So he's tremendous.
Sally, not all of it's been, you know, roses and fun. There have been some growing pains. Of course, every leader goes through such challenges in the role. And what have been yours so far, and what are you doing about it?
Yeah. You know, I will say though, Chris, I mean, everybody's been very open and receptive, right? I mean, I remember actually last Friday was my 1 year anniversary from the date I interviewed with Denison. And so the team was together on Friday morning, and I'm like, do you all remember when we were sitting around this table, right? And we talked about change, and can you embrace change? How do you feel about that, right? So we're not changing for just to change. We're changing very strategically, right? Because of the impact that it makes and propelling Denison forward, continuing to help it thrive. So I think, you know, there are some things that we are doing a little different that maybe have always been traditional for Denison. And there are certainly alumni who hold dear to the tradition as it's been. So it's navigating those conversations. It's, you know, showing the why we're doing this, how this will help Denison grow, how this will help us engage alumni on a higher level. So that is really, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of conversation and a lot of listening as well, right? I mean, it's hearing their thoughts and their feedback. So, you know, I would say overall, it has been very, very positive. But anytime you're going to come in and, you know, develop a program or make changes, there are going to be some growing pains with that.
One of the other areas you and I've talked about is the pace of growth and hiring new positions. You had some vacancies and then these new positions, and all of a sudden you have these, trying to find talent has been a challenge, right? I mean, to get the right people in the right roles. And I love the fact that you're picky isn't the right word, but you want the right people. You want the right team. That you're not going to settle for, you're going to keep looking until you find it. And where are you now? Give me a quick sense of how many jobs vacant still. And
well, out of, we've had three hires. We are about to make an offer probably for two more. So that fills five. Now, one of those was a vacant, like someone left and we're filling, right? But three of the new positions, we have hired phenomenal individuals to support. Julie Tucker would be a fourth. She came in 6 months ago. We brought her internally. So we're, I think, very close. We've got a volunteer engagement role that we're about to make an offer. We've got an events role that hopefully by the end of the week we'll be making an offer. But we do have two new roles that are, well, one role that just was posted and one that we've reposted. So we are Denison, you know, affinity is incredibly strong, right? And affinity, you can anywhere, right? You can define that in a thousand different ways. So right. We've created a position that will be focused on managing our affinity engagement. And so we just reposted that one yesterday. Really need to make sure we get the right fit, person with the right skill set, who's had volunteer management, has good communication skills, and really knows how to build that consensus. And then we are hiring for an early engagement position. So have a team member who is departing. She's moving back to closer to be with family. So that position will be focused on young alumni and student right. programming. So
if you're listening to this and you're interested in an affinity position or student young alumni position at Denison, reach out to Sally.
And we'll be hiring another volunteer engagement role once the senior associate director is named. Then we have a second position to support that area. So that will come on board here in the next month, I hope.
All right.
Exciting times at Denison.
Yes.
You know, Sally, we talked a little bit about the Knowlton Center for Career Exploration and the partnership that you have worked to develop over the last year. I wanted to ask you again about that relationship, how you stay in lockstep with that group, but also thinking about other units around campus. Where do you prioritize, you know, spending time developing partnerships, collaborative opportunities? What's really been where have you sort of focused your time, energy, and attention this first year and building those relationships around campus? And how are you thinking about that in the future?
Great question, Ryan. So for me, in the first 6 to 9 months, it has literally been the journey around campus, right? Lots of meetings with faculty chairs, different department heads, different, you know, units, et cetera, just to have a conversation about what type of programming that they do, how are alumni involved, are there opportunities for alumni involvement that we could capitalize on if they aren't already doing it, and then just talking about how our team can be helpful in that. And so, you know, Knowlton Center specifically, like that partnership, we were meeting probably every couple of weeks at the beginning, having planning conversations. Now, again, with the Julie's role filled, she is meeting with them really on a daily basis, right? So that's in a great place. So it is just the continued conversations. We meet with athletics on a regular basis as well to talk about how we are supporting our former student athletes, right? And engaging with current athletes, et cetera. So it's a lot of conversation. We are at faculty meetings represented. You know, Adam is always sharing things there as well. We're in faculty chair meetings, right? So just wherever we can infuse ourselves into campus and have those conversations, we will. With the strategic plan, I will add, we did two presentations on campus that everyone was invited to, all faculty and staff. Both of those were really well attended. So, you know, presented the highlights of the five priorities, some key task that would come from that. And then just inviting them to, you know, reach out to us for one-on-one conversations or if they needed support. And we have seen a huge shift since those two presentations of outreach from various departments asking for assistance. We're on a really good trajectory. We still have work to do, right? You're never done. But we're headed in the right direction.
All those areas are represented on the task force for this, Ryan. You know, this is the strategic planning process we go through is to involve people in the process so that they can be with us when we go to implement it. And you had Knowlton Center, two people from it. You had
we had admissions,
student athletics. We're all on that committee.
Everybody moving in the same direction when it comes to engaging alumni and donors and other stakeholders and sharing resources and collaborating on ideas. It's all part of making the trains run on time, right? And really chalking up some wins when it comes to engaging your stakeholders.
Well, and listen, it does not hurt when your chief executive is at every meeting, every conversation, right? Emphasizing what alumni and family engagement is doing and how we can help and be a part of it. I mean, I can't tell you how many emails I get copied on that he's like, hey, well, Sally's team can help you with this, right? All very positive. And it's all in line, aligned with what our priorities are. So, I mean, that and, you know, the senior staff with Greg Bader as the VP, like it's just constantly aware. Folks are very aware of what we're here and what we're focused on doing and how we can help.
In the second half, Ryan, we should add a question to put Sally on the spot. You get a little time to prepare, which is this, is that puts a little pressure on you to deliver. I'm sure that's, you know, it's, you know, when you have that kind of attention, you got to deliver. So let's talk about that in the second half too. I want to hear what Sally's thoughts are on it.
Yeah, that sounds good. We'll do that. So we'll sign off and return after the break, if you're a podcast listener, with our bonus section with Sally. And before we depart the live, albeit recorded today, show, Chris, we have our 50th episode of Alumlist coming up in 2 weeks. How's that? And who are our guests? And let's talk a little bit about that.
I think that's the golden anniversary, right? 50th?
Yes.
50th episode. It's a metrics palooza conversation with two really interesting guests. So Jenny Cook Smith from Case, who leads their the Case AEM and all the work they do in that area. What insights, right? Case insights is the area that you oversees. Yeah.
Formerly AM Atlas, I believe, right?
And now. That was correct. Yeah, it's had a few different names. Jenny will tell us about that, but she's fantastic. She's gonna be joined with one of our new partners, Ryan. We're going to announce more about this in a few weeks, but Melissa Shipke from Tassel, we're forging a partnership with CMAC to create a bespoke engagement report for any client who wants it. So we can show, you know, depth of engagement, breadth of engagement, and a nice dashboard style tool that Melissa is going to help us deliver for a few of our clients. We're in a pilot phase right now, but the two of them both have these incredible metrics-minded brains, and we're going to have a fun conversation on one of my favorite topics, too, alumni engagement metrics.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. Really excited. So many schools could use the help, you know, whether it's sort of completing the case survey or, creating attractive dashboards that display your engagement activity results or building engagement scores for individuals and slicing and dicing those engagement scores to help in various ways. So we'll talk more about that in 2 weeks, but I'm excited about that for new partnership. All right. Well, we will be back after the break. If you are a podcast listener and if you are watching us live on LinkedIn or YouTube, we'll be back in 2 weeks with Jenny and Melissa. So until then, we'll say goodbye.
Thanks, Sally. Great to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you both. Enjoyed the conversation.
Hey, listeners. Chris and I were going to record an ad discussing all the great aspects of Protopia, of which there are many. But instead, we thought it would be even better to hear from one of Protopia's current partners. Here's Sally Sistar, Executive Director of Alumni Engagement at Denison University, talking about her experience with the technology. If you like what you hear, be sure to go to protopia.co/alumlist and check it out. How do you see Protopia fitting into your plans? You've mentioned a few ways that I might imagine it fitting in, but what do you think?
It's a tremendous fit. Listen, I cannot tell you how excited I was when I took this job to know that they already had Protopia, right? It's a very, very smart decision. Because one, it just, you know, it with the AI technology enabled, like it takes us out of the equation, right? It is really a great tool for alumni and students to ask those questions and be connected to, you know, the top experts, right? Or the top individuals to answer those questions for them. What I've been really excited to hear about here at Denison is, you know, if that question goes to five alumni, well, all five of our graduates are answering. And then it gets into, you know, like a train of communications between them and the individual asking the question. So it's really facilitating community for us in a way that we couldn't do that ourselves if we were at the helm of trying to, you know, facilitate someone's question going to those individuals, right? It's just, it's automatic, and that's the beauty of it. The other thing I would say to you is that it is also, it's bringing people into, it's engaging alumni that may not have engaged with us in any other way, right? But they really are appreciative that, you know, they get an opportunity to help another alumni member or help a student. So I can't say enough great things about what a difference maker that has been for us on the engagement level.
All right, we are back. Today is the 26th of April. This is the podcast edition of Alumlist, the bonus section with Sally Sistar, Executive Director of Alumni and Family Engagement at Denison University. Had a great show in the first half, and you know, I always like to kick off the second half of the show, getting into a little more detail about your university, what the school is all about, and actually we kind of branded this episode around the unique differentiating characteristics of Denison, the idea of the school being have a career twist to its value proposition. And we talked a little bit about that off the bat of the first half an hour and what that actually means. But maybe you could share just a little bit more about Denison. And does the school have an origin story that focuses on business at all? Or would you say that career twist piece is new?
It's new. I think this really came with Adam Weinberg, right, as president. So we are a, as you said, private liberal arts university. We were founded in 1831. So we are just, what, 7 years shy of our 200th anniversary, which will be exciting. We don't have a business school, right? We don't have schools. Like there's majors, but there's no business school, no journalism school, et cetera. Those are all majors that you can participate in. We are fully residential. So 2,400 students that all live on campus. And so, you know, campus life obviously is really infused there. I mean, it's an integral part of their experience at Denison. So, again, going back to the career piece of this, Ryan, really, I think Adam Weinberg just coming in, you know, he had been in higher ed, then took a shift and worked for a nonprofit that did worked in education around the world. So he really understood the importance, right? That value proposition, as you said, how are we differentiating ourselves? How are we ensuring that Denisonians are prepared to be successful and make an impact in their life? And so that's really where the double down came from with career services and that professional journey.
Yeah, Chris, when we were thinking about a school with a career twist, I was thinking about one of our other clients, which is Bentley University in Boston, which is a pretty similar size school, but different in that it started off with its deep business accounting origins and has now developed itself into more of a classic liberal arts residential school, adding those liberal arts courses and frameworks on top of the business school sort of heritage. And it's sort of interesting to kind of compare how schools.
Yeah. But a little more, you know, there are differences there, Ryan, as you know, is a little bit more commuter history too. They had it early on. It wasn't residential. It was in Boston. They moved out to a suburb and they've been building it. But now it's very similar to Denison in many ways. But
yeah.
Journeys have been like opposite to where.
Very different journeys to produce a kind of a similar type of career twist.
Yep.
You know, vibe on today's educational experience. But Chris, you know, what do you think about the role that career-focused engagement should play in an engagement strategy? Do you think there should be a greater emphasis on it instead of, you know, traditions, or we use the phrase, you know, lifelong learning, which is often refers to like academic exploration type of content, but it doesn't have to, right? Lifelong learning could be career-related. What's the right mixture, I guess, is my question, as it relates to fusing career narratives into alumni engagement strategies?
Well, you've heard me say this, and if you're a listener on this podcast, you've heard me say this a lot, which is, I think it's experimentation. You got to try all of them and see what sticks. If you did a survey of your alumni, if any institution does a survey of your alumni population, the feedback you're going to get is that alumni want to be involved. Well, they want access to the network. They want to be involved in mentoring students. The younger audiences particularly will say they want access to job postings and internship opportunities or provide them. And then the other one that's woven in there is they also often want to be involved in the admissions recruitment process. So if you look at almost any survey you look at, those top five things right there, they're going to have something to do with careers and admissions. So again, back to the partnership thing as being so critical. So the alumni want these activities. The interesting thing is that a lot of alumni don't always behave the way they respond to on a survey. So that's where the experimentation comes in. You have to try different approaches here. I think there are parts of lifelong learning that work really well, but you know, just offering a faculty member to speak on a topic at a, you know, in the old model, we send them out to the regional chapters, almost is unheard of anymore. Some schools still do it, but a lot of it, you know, has been changed, became through the pandemic where we can deliver that without a faculty member traveling. Right. And you offer to a broader audience beyond just the regional zip code. So anyway, I think it boils down to experimentation, trying different things. I think there is a heavy dose of professional, especially with a young alumni audience, and offering that access to the network for our students through a tool like Protopia is another great example of how to leverage that. So those are the notes I put down on this one. So experiment. The survey will tell you yes on this, but you got to check behaviors as well. And then the other big one is the audience differentiation between your audiences. Your older alums aren't going to be interested in a networking reception unless they're owning a company and they're looking for talent. That might be why they come out. But a retired set's going to be more likely to be involved in a lifelong learning program. So again, it's trying different things with different audiences to see what sticks, I think, is what's important.
Well, let me ask you this, Chris and Sally, over to you off script here. You know, what would you say to a vice president of advancement that said, you know what, we are not going to focus on sort of career acceleration type of programs for alumni because those are not going to be our donors anytime soon, right? Those are people who are struggling with their career. They're not to be in a position to give. We have to be focused on those who are going to be able to give over the short term. And so therefore, you have to spend your time, energy, and resources worried about other tactics and other stakeholder groups.
Sally's answer would be much nicer than mine, because especially if it came from somebody at Denison, she has to stay there. I can leave and go home and get fired from our consulting gigs and say whatever the heck we want. But I'll say the more direct version, Sally. I want you to give it the nicer Sally version of it. But if somebody was a VP for advancement were to say that to me, it would depend on the relationship, but I'd probably say something like, well, you know, your successor would probably appreciate, and two of your successors from now would probably appreciate you planting these seeds a little bit more firmly and not just worrying about who can give now. If we just focus on the now, we'll have a great current campaign. We'll have a great current fundraising year, et cetera, but the future will suffer. We have to plant those seeds. And I think that's where, you know, the art of this industry, where it is about donor engagement, but it also is about longer term alumni engagement and seed planting that needs to happen. So I would encourage that person, depending on the relationship with them, in a very direct way, or might even say, are you freaking crazy? To not invest here is going to shut yourself off for the future. Sally, what's the nice version of that?
Yeah, I would say it's a missed opportunity, if you didn't focus. And the other thing for me, though, is, so particularly at Denison, we talk about, like, you're a dentist, lifelong Denisonians, right? And once you're a Denisonian, we always support you, right? We're there to be a part of your journey. So I think, you know, that's part of helping our alums to be successful, right? It's an investment in them, essentially. So I think I would tell that VP that they might want to reconsider their decision, because ultimately, as Chris said, you are planting seeds, right? I think that's why we find ourselves, a lot of schools find ourselves in the position now. A lot of, you know, when you think about your alumni engagement rate and your annual giving rate, is because we haven't done the job to invest in connecting, engaging them, supporting them along the way. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're asking for their support and they don't necessarily agree, because we haven't been there. You know, we haven't had relevance in their lives until that point.
Ryan, what's your answer as a career guy? You've done the mixture of career services and alumni. What's your response to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, we learned through the most recent case survey results last year that it's really 11 years after graduation that giving really kicks in, right? So people are in their mid-30s, early to mid-30s by the time that they really accelerate in their philanthropic. So we can't just wait till then, right? In order to provide valuable engagement opportunities and experiences, it's got to start well before that. And I think, you know, there are definitely opportunities to provide career acceleration, access to the network, right? Volunteer opportunities, helping other people that are, help pave the way to that future engagement for the lifetime. But I think that there are some things we can outsource, like career coaching for alumni. For example, if you were to use LinkedIn and look up at any university, the dozens and dozens of talent professionals who are your graduates.
Yeah.
And if you have a budget that's, you know, shoestring, you have five people on your team, right? And not the 18 at Denison, right? Then you have to make some hard choices about time and what you're going to be doing with that time. And so you might look to alumni to help fill in some of those gaps, establish partnerships with people who can provide career coaching, that kind of a thing. But I think it's a complicated answer, particularly, you know, if you ask, you know, an advancement vice president who is thinking about the short term.
Yep, exactly.
You know, and success of the university who is not today's president, right? And you are to this moment's vice president about using limited resources to engage donors and what works and how you're going to do that and make choices. I understand that it's tough.
Yeah. The beauty of the Denison situation is you have a board of trustees, a president and a vice president, Greg Bader, you mentioned him before, very thoughtful guy and gets what you just described, the long-term investment here. And Sally, that's, you know, one of the reasons why I encourage you to look at the role, because you had that kind of support from the leadership that you needed to be successful there with that longer term strategy. Sorry, I think it's great. I'm going to stay off script, Ryan, and go back to the thing I mentioned before. Ryan would say, it's my show, you do whatever you want. But Sally, I mentioned this right before the break, but so with the investment that you've seen and the attention from a board and a president and a vice president, Are you feeling pressure and to deliver and how have you responded to it? And give us your take on how you handle it.
The obvious answer is yes, right? I love being in these meetings and, you know, Adam will say something or someone will reference it and a trustee member will turn to me and like, no pressure. Like, so, but, you know, I think it's one, it's exciting. It's an exciting pressure to have, but it does call for some candid conversations. I've had to have candid conversations with my team about the resources that are being invested in our, you know, operation. And therefore, we need to see results, right? So we look at what are the quick wins where we can see immediate successes, and then what are we thinking about long term? So it is, you know, it requires a lot of intentionality. We cannot take our foot off the brake. But we also need to be really smart. And that's what I've also talked to the team about. It's, you know, we cannot, we will not, and we cannot do this all in 6 months. Yep. We, you know, it's a 3-year strategic plan. So what are we doing in the first year? And then we're, you know, we'll be preparing. Chris, I think you're actually coming to campus to help us with that conversation as
well. Right.
Very intentionally about what's year two, what are year three, particularly now with all the new team members coming in, right? My team is very, and I are very aware of, you know, the emphasis, the lens, and, you know, are doing the work that needs to be done, including volunteers, right? It's a lot of conversations as well with volunteers about here's where we are, but here's where we need to be and how they can be a big part of helping us to get there. So
have you had to make any kind of tough decisions? You mentioned, you know, sort of relationship management as you've been sort of making programmatic modifications, updates, that it has meant having, you know, challenging conversations, I suppose, with people who are like, you know, I really liked it that way, that way that we used to do it. Can you kind of share an example of where friction comes into play in with staff or volunteers?
Yeah. A couple of examples, Ryan. So one, there's definitely, again, shifting in staff and their focus, right? And so there have been a couple of hard conversations of, you've been here for a very long time. I know you're really invested. We need to, you know, align you with your strengths that are also aligned with the strategic priority. And so that's, again, continuing conversation, getting the staff members comfortable with where that shift is and where their focus will be, underscoring the value, right? Again, we're doing this strategically because this will help us be more successful. And it also should put you in a better place to be more successful in your career. The other piece, we've just finished our long round of conversations about with our alumni council members, also talked with the Board of Trustees about this shift. So council over time has just diminished in its productivity, engagement, membership, all of that. So we've taken the strategic plan as an opportunity to revisit what our volunteer structures look like. So we will be launching a new alumni advisory board on July 1st. Some elements like structurally that are the same from the council, but sunsetting the alumni council for all intents and purposes. And so making sure that the alumni advisory board is aligned with alumni engagement, the strategic plan priorities, the university, and their job is essentially to advise us being AFE, on alumni engagement, serving as the voice of alumni network on matters of alumni engagement, right? So being fully aligned on that. The other piece, this one created a little bit more, I wouldn't say friction, but it certainly was a lot of conversation to hear voices that were impacted and invested, is we have moved all of our affinity network representatives. You know, they had a seat on the council. Essentially, I mean, they were at 2 meetings a year, maybe had 5 minutes to share what their group was doing, and that's it, right? So how does that help that program grow? It didn't. So we have shifted them to an affinity engagement roundtable that will be managed by the new team member we're hiring. And until that person gets here, likely going to be myself, right? So you just do what you got to do to keep things moving forward successfully. So they were good conversations. They were cathartic conversations, I think. Some were a little hard, right? You take it personal of like, why are you replacing me? Are you firing me? I mean, I actually had a volunteer. I was like, are we having this call because you're firing me? Like, no, we're not firing you, but we want to talk with you about what this shift is and looks like and how it's meant to be better supportive and help your program that you're volunteering for grow. So those were, you know, they were not the easiest of conversations, right? Anytime you're going to make a shift on something that's been in place for 30, 40 years at a university, it can have its challenges. So, but overall, I think they went well.
You bring to your role tons of experience in our space from schools like Elon, the Medical University of South Carolina, UNC Charlotte. Have any of those, which all quite a bit different, although Elon may be a bit similar to Denison in certain ways. Have you, any of those experience been particularly helpful as you think about the team that you're building and the strategies there at Denison? Or do you find it you're sort of thinking in unique ways at this moment, or maybe some of both?
Some of both. But I would say Elon experience is obviously the most, has been for me, obviously to me, the most relevant, you know, similar school, yeah, private liberal arts. A lot of the programming that I was able to implement and build there at Elon, right, is where we are bringing that now to Denison. And there's a foundation at Denison, but in some ways, we're really just growing that foundation tremendously. And so it's taking where I was at Elon at that time, same experience, right, of building a foundation and now bringing that to Denison with the difference, right? What's the Denison twist? What's the Denison difference? They are, while they have similarities, they are unique institutions. So those really are, that would be my most parallel experience where I'm bringing the most to what I'm doing today.
How long have you been in the field, Sally?
I don't want to talk about that, Chris.
Well, you started when you were 9, so 20 years, you're 29.
Yes, thank you. Listen, I got my start at UNC Chapel Hill, managing homecoming and reunions for them. So I have been in the field for, I think, over 20 years now, which is very hard for me to say.
Started when you were 9, you're 29, 20 years.
Yeah. Thank you.
What are a couple of things that have stuck with you through that journey that, you know, if you were mentoring a younger person coming through or a new person to the field, what would you share with them? Some of the one or two takeaways for the work you've done?
Listen, one is relationships, right? We are in the relationships business. And so that is really important. You put the energy and the time into building strong relationships. I remind myself of that often, right? I am an Elon grad. So that was different because I was doing that for my alma mater. But every school I've been at since, obviously, I'm not a graduate there. So I always keep that in mind. And I would say that to any of my team as well is, you know, these are lifelong relationships. So take care of those, preserve those, even as we're making changes. And those changes can be difficult for folks to, you know, to navigate or to absorb. Like, just remember that at the end of the day, we're doing what's best for the institution, but it is also their relationship. So take care of that and don't damage it.
It's great advice. Great advice. We, from time to time, we do a fill in the blank response. And this is your fill in the blank question. You ready?
Okay.
The toughest nut to crack in alumni and family engagement is blank.
Oh, goodness. The toughest nut to crack. Listen, I think it continues to be this perception that we only want our alumni and our families to give philanthropically, right? That is a tough, it's a perception. Perception is a tough nut to crack.
Yep. For sure. We hear that all the time. In my roles, when I was at institutions, I would run into alums and say, you're the guy who asked me for money all the time. And I'm like, no, I'm actually not.
You really not. Well, that goes back to Ryan's question about the conversation with the VP, right? Like, that's what we hear, and it's not true, but that's the perception, is the only thing we care about is their philanthropic contribution. And that's far from the truth.
I often think of it in sort of two things have to be true at the same time, which is, you know, yes, the point of the university advancement division is to raise philanthropic funds.
Of course.
Like, that is the point. That is the reason.
Very important.
The reason exists, and it's really important. However, alumni paid for their degrees, right? They don't owe the university anything. So all of those additional gifts, whether it's, of course, treasure, but time, talent, networks as well, have to be earned by the university through creative and thoughtful programs and initiatives that will keep alumni involved. And so those two things have to be true at the same time. And it's important to be clear about philanthropy being, you know, the point, but that everyone recognizes that it's not how this thing works, right? You have to sort of create the environment under which alumni feel compelled to give, and that the university cares about them throughout their lives. So it's tricky, which makes it so challenging, right? To have this field and to do this work. All right, so make a prediction. In 2 years, what are we celebrating about the work that you and your team are doing at Denison?
Oh, goodness. It will be thriving. I mean, we're on the right track. I'm so excited about what we're putting in place. So, you know, I see our regional networks will be thriving, lots of activity that's happening there. Our alumni engagement participation rate should be up close to 40%, 45% by that time, somewhere between 40 and 45. I think we're going to see just a higher level of engagement at Denison with what we've got on tap for us. So we'll definitely be celebrating, and we'll be planning a new strategic plan at that point, won't we, Chris? Cool. It'll be time to start thinking about what's next.
I'll put a proposal together for you, Sally. For
work is never done.
That was funny.
So you're in a campaign right now, correct?
We're in the silent phase of the campaign. So we will launch the campaign next fall publicly. And so the campaign, alumni engagement is actually part of the campaign. Our goal is to have 60% alumni participating through the life of the campaign, not within the year. For us, our goal is just one fiscal year to get to 50% by 2031. So kind of two ways to slice and dice that. So campaign ends fiscal year 27, which is also when the current strategic plan for alumni engagement will be finished.
It's great. Good. I'm glad there's a measurable goal in your campaign for engagement as well. That's fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, a few minutes to go here. Let's transition to our Friday Cheers section of the podcast, where we bring to the episode something that we're thinking about. This is maybe a recommendation you have for a book or a movie or a podcast or an article that you've read, a recipe. We've had some recipes here on Alumless. Or maybe something that you're thinking about that's occupying your mind in this moment in time. Sally, what's your Friday cheers?
So, Atomic Habits, James Clear. He's a 2008 Denison grad, right? I know many of us are familiar with that. But he also does a weekly email, and it's three things, right? It's so easy to tap into that email every week. And it's simple, like two quotes from him. There's a quote from someone else, just things, food for thought, right? And so if folks aren't signed up for his email, I would certainly recommend it. He's also great to follow on social media. I do it through Instagram, and he will throw those nuggets out there as well. Just things to think about. How are you utilizing your time? What habits are you cultivating, right, to be successful? So,
Atomic Habits.
Atomic Habits. Have you not read it, Chris? No,
I don't think I have either. Yeah.
Well, let me funny story if we have time for it. I was reading it. I don't even know that I had interviewed yet at Denison. And in the first couple of chapters, he talks about he was a star baseball player for us. And so a lot of this book comes from his experience as a student athlete and developing the habits to be really successful. And it was just like world is ready to tell me something, right? Denison, and I'm thinking about this job. Like, okay. So fortuitously, it all worked out.
That's pretty cool.
Awesome. Chris, how about you?
Yeah, I'll do a quick one. A visual aid today. One of my favorite books I've ever read.
Ooh.
Team of Rivals.
Yep.
The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln by Doris Kearns Goodwin. She's a Pulitzer Prize winning author. It talks about Abraham Lincoln's rise to and his presidency during a tough time in our nation's history. So it's relevant today. In fact, I brought it out. I think I'm going to reread it, to be honest with you, given where we are today's political world. But it's a lesson on leadership, on listening and empathy, and getting your rivals to be your teammates in this. So, it was, again, during the Civil War, during his presidency, we brought together a very divided nation and did it in a very unique way and was sort of a long shot for the presidency, even to win the Republican nomination when he won it. So it's worth the read, great lessons on history, but also applications to today's world and what we're all dealing with. So, Team of Rivals.
Doris Kearns Goodwin is an excellent historian. She's read some other great novels too, but that may be one of her best and most well-known. And I think it was consulted in the making of the movie Lincoln, which Daniel Day-Lewis was a star. If you haven't watched that one, that's a great movie too. Mine is, I had the chance, I took my son on a road trip to Miami last weekend. We took Thursday and Friday off, hopped on an airplane. I surprised them and we flew down to Miami and we got tickets to see Inter Miami FC versus the Nashville FC soccer match. So Inter Miami plays in actually Fort Lauderdale. And they have on their team at this moment Lionel Messi, who is perhaps the most well-known soccer player in the world, truly one of the greats the game has ever seen. And he and I went down and had a great guys' weekend. And the stadium was a brand new stadium, kind of in the middle of nowhere, Fort Lauderdale, kind of out by a more private airport. But the vibe there was off the hook. People, there's the whole section behind the goal where people were singing the whole game, and Messi scored two goals, so it was such a fun experience to have. They won 3-1. Everybody wearing Messi shirts around the stadium. You kind of wonder what's going to happen when he's no longer there on the team anymore. He's just that much of a game changer as far as the game itself, but also for the team and for the club. So my recommendation is while Messi is there, Inter Miami FC playing soccer here in the United States, take football. The time, the once in a lifetime opportunity to check out that team, whether it's on TV or you have some spare scratch to fly down to Fort Lauderdale and check it out.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps things up today. Thank you so much, Sally. It was great to have you on the show.
Thanks. Fun to be with you both.
Yeah. Well done, Sally. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure as always. I'm sure we'll be talking later today about something. Probably another proposal, right?
Yep.
which is great. Always good. But thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with Melissa Shipke from Tassel and CMAC and our friend Jenny Cook-Smith from Case. And we'll see you then. Bye.